Godzilla is now in New York City.
Monster 01 and 02, commence the attack.
And welcome back to Stomp This Way. This week, we are covering a very exciting movie, a very infamous movie.
You could say that.
Maybe a little bit out of our purview, but
there's some pretty big stuff.
There's some big bugs in it and monsters and such. So I think we're justified in covering this movie. But that movie is Starship Troopers.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Oh, yeah. The 1996 sci-fi epic? Question mark? We'll talk about it. So, Andrew, obviously, you've seen this movie.
Several times.
I've seen this movie several times. It's been a couple years. It's been a while since I sat down and watched it.
It's been a few months.
A few months. Yeah. We're only going to do... At least for now, never say never. We're only going to do the first Starship Troopers, theatrically released Starship Troopers movie for now. If we get desperate enough for content, or if they ever come out with a remake or something, we might go back and do those VOD sequels.
Mm-hmm. There's like three of them now.
I think there's three sequels. I think there's four movies in total. So, but we're going to... I've seen them. They're not good. We're just going to do... I'm not saying this one's good, but we're gonna stick to the one that most people have seen, which is the 1996 film. But anyway, you want to talk about some... Oh, I just want to say one other thing. I think I knew this at some point and had just forgot, but in my research for this film, which I did Wednesday... I discovered that this was based off a book, a Hugo Award-winning novel written in 1959 by Robert A. Heinlein. And I was like, you know, I'm going to do my homework. I'm going to do my due diligence for the people that listen to this podcast. So I ordered the book on Wednesday, came in on Friday. Thank you, Amazon. And then I crammed that baby down and I finished reading it this morning. Sunday morning, so that we could watch and record this podcast here Sunday night. So here we are.
Yeah.
So anyway, getting into some production trivia. Now I'll say, go to Wikipedia. Wikipedia wrote a freaking novel about the making of this movie, because I think there is a novel about the making of this movie. I just put a few things down here. Of course, we can talk about other things as we go along with the movie, but... As I said, based on a novel by Robert A. Heinlein, written in 1959, Hugo Award-winning, controversial at the time. Ooh. This movie was controversial. We'll get into all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie began development as a script called Bug Hunt at Outpost 7. However, the producer noticed similarities between this script and Heinlein's book. So he urged a rewrite to make it into an adaptation of the novel because, you know, a studio always loves adapting an existing IP above original ideas.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was originally pitched in 1991, but right concerns, studio exec pushback, and regime changes at TriStar kept pushing the film back. TriStar finally agreed to finance the film after Touchstone Pictures, which was then owned by Disney, agreed to co-finance it. Largely the same creative team behind RoboCop, director, writer, creature designer, all came from the team that worked on RoboCop. They did consider names like Wahlberg and Damon for the role of Rico, but director Verhoeven settled on Van Dien. He wanted a fresh face, I guess. The cast went through a 12-day boot camp to learn combat skills and tactics before the filming started. It was filmed between April and October of 1996. Post-production lasted from October of 96 to August of 97, which for a film in the late 90s was a pretty long post-production.
Oh, yeah.
Just to, you know, remind people of kind of, this is an effects CGI-driven film, to kind of remind people of where we were at in the history of CGI-driven films. You know, this is post-Jurassic Park by a few years, obviously, but this predates films like Phantom Menace, movies like Matrix, Titanic. What was the other one I was trying to think of? Godzilla 98.
Godzilla.
So, you know, still kind of early in the days of CGI-driven cinema.
You know, it holds up pretty well despite everything.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later, but yeah. You know, many critics at the time this was released interpreted this film as a pro-fascist movie. And that was part of the reason that it was hammered by the critics. Of course, now with a, you know, 2020s lens, it is very clear that this is a satire. I would think that it would have been clear at the time too. But, you know, I was thinking about this, you know, and even our father, of course, he wasn't thinking about the movie in terms of, you know, fascist, communist, whatever. But he even always says that, oh, the movie's so stupid because, you know, the military was not like that. Of course, he's a veteran and everything.
Yeah.
But I just, people honestly at the time, I don't think largely realized that this was a satire and it was supposed to be satirical and over the top. Of course, like I said, watching it now, it seems so obvious. But,
yeah,
you know, and then again, we were kind of in a time in history, 1996, of course, I can't speak from firsthand knowledge. I was born a year later after this film was made. But we were kind of, you know, say in between wars. You know, we'd had, I think, Operation Desert Storm 1, I think, was in 94. So we were kind of involved in the Middle East, but it was pre-9/11. Obviously, post-Vietnam by 2 decades.
Yeah.
You know, the Cold War had ended by this point. It's, you know, pre-9/11 and the invading Iraq and the weapons of mass destruction. I don't think that the population at large was really in a mindset of, you know, making fun of the military-industrial complex and thinking about the military and our overseas predicaments and endless wars and all that. So I think the movie just kind of came out in the wrong time.
Yeah.
I think if it had came out, you know, I don't know, 2 or 3 years after 9/11, after the whole WOM thing had turned out to be a farce and all that,
yeah,
people may have been much more receptive to a movie making fun of the military.
Not at that point in time.
But not in 96. I think that was just kind of a victim of the decade in which it came out.
Yeah.
But anyway, enough. You know, theorizing about that. But another thing I thought was funny was apparently critics were also critical of the violence in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And watching it now, it's like, nothing. For an R-rated sci-fi movie, that's pretty mild. There's a lot of nudity. A lot of nudity. But pretty mild, all in all. On violence, at least. But anyway, yeah, you know, like I said, you could read a lot more about it. It was a very troubled production. They had all kinds of logistics problems getting to and from their on-site shooting, on-location shooting. They'd shot in the deserts and all that, and a lot of trouble with that. Apparently, one time, they were, not the cast, but the crew, was getting on a plane to fly, I don't remember, from New Zealand back to the States or something, and they were belligerent and drunk and got kicked off the flight and delayed shooting by a couple of days.
Whoa, that's never good.
They were under constant fear that the the budget was going to be, the rug was going to be pulled out from under them by these constantly rotating TriStar regimes. Apparently TriStar was going through a lot of upheaval. And then you had the added issues, as again, I'll kind of get into as we go through the film. Paul Verhoeven hated the book. Didn't even, he got like through two chapters of it and didn't even want to read it. So he relied on the writer to basically summarize the plot of it. The writer, as I said, had started this as an original idea and was kind of forced into adapting Starship Troopers.
Yeah.
And as I said, the book itself was controversial. And of course, I think reading the book, I'm glad I did. It'll give us a lot to talk about and compare and contrast as we go through this film. But anyway, we'll talk about that through the meat of this podcast. But I did want to say that this movie was nominated for some awards.
Wow.
Believe it or not. Nominated, didn't win anything. Nominated for the following. At the second Golden Satellite Awards, it was nominated for Best Motion Picture, Animated or Mixed Media. At the Academy Awards, it was nominated for Best Visual Effects. MTV Movie Awards, it was nominated for Best Action Sequence. At the Hugo Awards, Best Dramatic Presentation. And then, here's one that may make more sense. At the Stinkers Bad Movie Awards, it won, or it was nominated for Worst Picture. So, there you go.
Yeah.
Anyway, box office. Box office was as follows. This was released on November 7th of 1997. It had been pushed out of the summer blockbuster window. 97 was a very big year for blockbusters. I may have said 96 earlier, but I guess it came out in 97. So I was born. I was like a month or two old. September, October. About a month old.
Getting your dates wrong over here.
I know. I think it was filmed in 96, and then they kept pushing the release date back. So it's essentially a 96 movie. Anyway, budget of somewhere between 100 and 110 million, which I read that they spent approximately 50% of that on CGI, just straight CGI. Domestic opening of 22.1 million, domestic gross of 54.8 million, and a total worldwide gross of about 121 million, which, of course, didn't cover marketing and everything else, so
nah.
It was a flop. It was a flop. I mean, it ruined a lot of people's careers, as we'll get into. Anyway, we're going to listen to a trailer. We're going to come back, talk about the cast and crew, read the plot summary, and we'll dive right in. See you in a bit.
In every age, there is a cause worth fighting for. But in the future, the greatest threat to our survival will not be man at all.
Hey, kid, what's going on?
It's war! We're going to war!
Now the youth of tomorrow must travel across the stars to defend our world.
We are a generation commanded by fate to defend humankind.
Everyone fights, no one quits.
We are going in with first wave. You smash the entire area. You kill anything that has more than two legs. You get me?
We get you, sir!
But they will face an enemy more devastating than any ever imagined.
Here they come!
We need retrieval now.
Someone made a damn mistake.
No!
The bugs laid a trap for us, didn't they?
TriStar Pictures takes you to the front lines of the next frontier.
Kill them all!
Starship Troopers.
All right, you ready, Andrew?
Oh, yeah, you know it.
All right. It was directed by Paul Verhoeven, as I said, mostly of RoboCop fame. He's also done a lot of other or a few other things that didn't hit so well, including this.
Yeah.
Written by Edward Neumeier. Music by Basil Poledouris. I probably butchered that. I don't know. I don't know if you even typed it right. Effects by Phil Tippett. And starring Casper Van Dien, Nina Meyer, Denise Richards, Jake Busey, Neil Patrick Harris, Clancy Brown, Seth Gilliam, Patrick Muldoon, and Michael Ironside. There's some names in there.
Yeah, there
and
then, is.
And there's Casper Van Dien. This, poor guy. I kind of feel sorry. This was supposed to be a star-making vehicle. Everybody thought, I say everybody, a lot of people thought this was going to be like the next big, you know, Star Wars or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It simultaneously made and destroyed the career of Casper Van Dien.
This was his career.
Yeah, this was his career. You know, Denise Richards, she got out on the other side okay. Neil Patrick Harris, you know, he got out and got How I Met Your Mother, which resurrected his career. Clancy Brown has been, you know, he's been around for a long time as a character actor. And then Michael Ironside, of course, was famous when he made this movie. Yeah. But, yeah.
So it didn't hurt him much. Yeah.
But anyway, plot, as I just wrote, I left out a lot of subplots and stuff, just got the very surface level, but this is what I wrote. In the 23rd century, Earth is governed by the Federation, a militaristic government where citizens and civilians are divided between those who have served and those who have not. Four high school friends, Rico, Carl, Carmen, and Dizzy, decide to sign up for the military. Carl is going to be a scientist, Carmen is going to be a pilot, and Rico and Dizzy are sent to the infantry. During boot camp, Earth is attacked by intergalactic insects known as arachnids, or bugs for short. War is declared, and Rico, along with hundreds of thousands of infantry troops, are sent to the bug homeworld of Plendathu. However, the Federation troops are poorly informed and prepared, and it is a brutal defeat. Rico is marked as KIA, but in fact he was rescued and spent some time in a bacta tank to heal. Rico and his friends are then deployed to Planet P, which was thought to be cleared by aerial bombardment, but they soon learn it's still crawling with bugs. Dizzy and the commanding officer are killed in the ensuing battle, but Carmen flies in for a daring rescue of Rico and the survivors. Carl returns to inform Rico and Dizzy that they suspect a brain bug to be on Planet P, and Rico and the rest of the infantry is sent back down to the surface to capture it. During the battle, Carmen's spaceship is blown in half, and her escape pod lands in the subterranean bug home. Her co-pilot has his brain sucked out by the brain bug, but she is rescued by Rico just in time. In the end, the brain bug is captured, and Carl uses his psychic powers to feel that it is indeed afraid. We cut to another recruitment video for the military as credits roll.
That's pretty spot on.
I mean, that's pretty much what happened, right?
Yeah, that's...
But anyway, yeah, the movie starts with a scene that comes back about in the middle of the movie. Starts with the invasion of Klondothu.
Yeah.
And this, like, military reporter, you know, seeing the bug and, you know, reporting on it or whatever. And
mm-hmm.
all the troops are shouting, "We gotta get out of here," mm-hmm. or whatever. And then, you know, actually, I guess it starts with, there's a lot of cut-ins of, like, these Federation newsreels and recruitment videos and stuff throughout the movie. Yeah. And that's what it starts as, and then goes into, like, the live invasion. And then we cut back, you know, to earlier, a few months earlier or whatever.
Yeah.
And we're in a high school classroom, and we meet really the four
main characters.
We have Rico, played by Casper Van Dien.
Mm-hmm.
We have Carmen, played by Denise Richards. We have Dizzy, played by, what was her name? Dina Meyer. And then Carl, played by Neil Patrick Harris. And then we also have, like, the bully slash, you know, later love interest of Denise Richards, played by Patrick Muldoon.
And, yeah.
You know, he'll sign up as well. But, yeah, you know, they're sitting in class, Michael Ironside's class, and they're goofing off or whatever, and they're talking about signing up. There's obviously already a love triangle between Rico, who is in love with, what is her name?
Carmen.
Carmen. But Dizzy also has the hots for Rico.
Yeah.
And then they'll have a football game a little bit later, or their futuristic version of football. And we learn that Patrick Muldoon's character, Xander, I think.
Yeah.
Xander also has a crush on Carmen. So there's, you know, there's a lot of teen angst in this movie.
Yeah.
For a movie about Starship Troopers killing giant space bugs, all added for this movie. The book, I mean, there are characters named, you know, he does have a high school classmate named Carmen, who he has the hots for, but she turns into a very minor character really quick. There is also his best friend named Carl. Again, turns into a very minor character very quick in the book. Dizzy is a character created for this movie, not in the book. There's a lot of combining, merging characters. For example, Carl is kind of a combination of, in the book, there was his friend, like I said, named Carl, who was later killed in action. But in the movie, they've kind of combined Carl with a character that they introduced at the very end of the book. Not even really a character, as they don't even name him, more of an idea. But there is this, like, they don't use the term psychic, but there is like this supernatural, or ESP-er, or whatever you want to call him, shows up at the end of the book. And they don't, like, read minds, like, portrayed in this movie, but he can, like, use his mind to, like, feel the bugs underground or whatever and, like, map out their caverns and stuff. But Carl is kind of a combination of those two characters. Michael Ironside is a combination of two characters. He's a combination of the teacher, who is named Mr. Du Bois in the novel, and then a character who Michael Ironside takes his name from, named Raschek or whatever, who was his first lieutenant or whatever that he had in the, or one of the lieutenants he had in the book that he really respected. But they do a lot of that. But anyway, so they go and sign up for the military. And, you know, Carmen, also taken from the book, she wants to go be a pilot. Carl goes to R&D. And then Rico is sent to infantry. And then later, we'll figure out that Dizzy also signed up in secret.
And got transferred herself. And
forced to transfer to Rico's infantry unit or whatever. I apologize if I get some of the military jargon wrong. But let me tell you, the book is not what I expected. The book is
way different than the movie.
Quite a bit different. It is not really about bugs versus humans. I mean, that's, you know, like the synopsis you'll read on the back or whatever. But really, there's like two instances of like bugs fighting humans in the books. There's a battle scene at the very beginning. And then there is a battle scene at the very end. And the rest of the book is really just in the most excruciating detail, laying out the structure of this future military. And it just goes on and on about like the chain of command and everyone's title and where they are placed in the chain of command and what it really means in terms of how much authority they have. I mean, I'm talking paragraphs and paragraphs and paragraphs of them going on about that. And the book spends about, it's not a very long book. It's about, I think the edition I had was like 278 pages. I think they spend a little over 100 of those pages in the boot camp, which would translate to about what they do here in this movie.
Yeah.
But in the boot camp, you know, doing all that stuff. And then once he gets out of the boot camp, again, not a whole lot of action. It's just, you know, explaining his life in the military and, you know, being on the ships and everything. And then, of course, the author takes a lot of breaks to have characters go on these long exposition chapters about the morality of the military and how this future society works and the shortcomings of, you know, 20th century society and all this. And I'll say, whereas the movie, you know, as we now see here, watching it present day, is clearly a satire on this, you know, quote unquote, fascist government. The book, I'm not going to call the book fascist. I think that term is thrown around way too liberally these days. But it is definitely what you would traditionally consider right-wing in its politics. And the book is sincere in these themes of nationalism and patriotism and all that, whereas this movie is satirizing it. You know, I'll say the book, I'm not one to recoil at, you know, right-wing, quote-unquote, themes and ideas and, and media. Some might even consider me to be a right-winger. I consider myself to be a
neutral party.
More or less neutral, maybe just right of center. But of course, I guess that all depends on your vantage point. The book does, I think it has some good argument. I mean, the author clearly lays out his arguments, and you can go and read them for yourself if you wish. I think the book kind of makes for a boring read, if I'm being honest. But I think it has some good points about the value of hard work and, you know, to an extent, the value of patriotism and all of that. The book is also a bit too cavalier about warfare for my taste. And I do, again, and it's hard to know if this is truly like a hard belief of the author or if this is just him trying to world build this futuristic society he's writing about. But he does in the book, like in this movie, really hammer home the idea of there being a separation of civilians and citizens. And the only way you can be a true citizen with the right to vote is to serve in the military, which is an idea that I kind of, you know, obviously I don't really think that's a great idea. But anyway, that's basically the book. But getting back to the movie, you know, they have these silly cut-in. I call them silly. They're so over the top of recruitment videos of, like, kids, like, playing with these real blaster rifles.
Them handing out bullets. And
yeah. And, I mean, which makes it clear to me that this movie is definitely a satire. You can't, I don't know how you would take it any other way. Then we have them going to boot camp. And this is the part that really, you know, turned, like, my dad off of the movie because he's like, well, boot camp wasn't like that. They're not that mean. And I was like, well, yeah, it's supposed to be funny. Whatever. They're not funny, but, you know, over the top. But anyway.
In the book, did he really get somebody killed and whipped?
In the book, he was not the first to get whipped. There was a guy before him. Like, they made a difference. Like, there was a guy before him that got whipped for, got court-martialed and whipped because he struck a commanding officer. And then Rico later did. He got an administrative whipping, like, in this. Because, what did he do?
In the movie, one of his men he commanded over in his squad had a helmet malfunction, so he had them take it off for him to look at, and a stray bullet.
During a live fire exercise.
And it hit him in the head and killed him.
It was kind of similar in the book. They were doing some kind of exercise. In the book, they have these, they had these big exoskeleton suits that they had, which they've cut out of this movie. But these exoskeleton suits basically, you know, allowed them to, they had like jets so they could jump really high and stay in the air for a long time. They were armed to the teeth, super strong. They had these miniature nukes that they could fire, which they had those in this movie too.
Yeah.
But they basically made them into giant killing machines. Paul Verhoeven, the director, thought that that really stripped away the fear factor of the bugs if they could just jump away from them all the time. But in this movie, they kind of portray it as like, it takes a whole lot of soldiers to kill one bug. And the book is kind of reversed. A soldier in one of his mobile suits could kill a whole bunch of bugs. But so I think it's actually a pretty wise choice for the movie. But anyway, he was doing some kind of exercise with their mobile units and he made a decision that could have gotten one of his men killed and he got five black lickings or whatever. But Yeah, so they go through boot camp. I think the instructors in, because again, they're trying to satirize it, the instructors in the movie are a little more vicious than they were portrayed as in the book. But, you know, Sergeant Zim, taken from the book, I would say Sergeant Zim is probably the one that, whose character arc stays most consistent with the book, because he was the hard-ass drill instructor. And then he also was the guy at the very end who captured the brain bug, which was, like I said, probably the most similar character arc to the book. But yeah, of course, Sergeant Zim is, you know, breaking their bones in combat, yeah, and he's throwing knives through their hands, mm-hmm, and doing all that. Played by Clancy, what is his name? Clancy Brown?
Yeah.
Whatever his name is.
You know, truly, all he wants to do is go into combat and fight these bugs one-on-one.
Yeah. And again, they even do that in the book. This is the character, for whatever reason, this is the character they decided they would stick with the book with. But anyway, you know, there's been all this stuff to fill in some of the subplots. Rico, again, taken from the book, he was kind of disenfranchised with his parents, you know, over this whole going into the military thing, cut off by his parents. But they, at the end, they decide to call him from Buenos Aires. And again, taken from the book, Buenos Aires on the movie, as they happen to be on a video call, is wiped out by the bugs and kills his parents.
Yeah.
In the book, his mom died. His dad actually later, even though he was so upset about him joining the military, his dad later actually joined the military and ended up serving under him by the end of the book.
Wow.
But anyway, because this military apparently takes anybody at any age, unlike ours. But, you know, and the author of the book, just to say, Heinlein was a Navy vet. I think he was medically discharged after like 5 years into his service or something. But so, you know, he felt very strongly about, you know, the military, mm-hmm, in a positive sense from his point of view. But anyway, kills his parents, they declare war, and they go to war with these bugs. And that's about, I think, about an hour into this movie, about halfway through, mm-hmm, where we go to Klondothu for this battle. And I'll say, the first half of the movie, not a lot of action in terms of bugs versus humans. You know, they've
except
got,
for the opening credit scene.
Except for the opening stinger. But yeah, you know, they do the whole boot camp thing and all that. But there's one thing, you know, they, of course, they have the kind of now infamous shower scene where everybody's naked.
Yeah.
And the director at the time, Paul Verhoeven, defended it, trying to say, like, he wanted to, because let me just say that in the movie, the infantry is a co-ed infantry, men and women together.
Yeah.
Not that way in the book. It's very much a more traditional way of looking at it. The infantry was men. They do have this thing where most of the ship captains and pilots are women, because women have, you know, whatever, according to the book, I don't know how scientific it is, faster reflexes and things like that. So they do have women in the Navy, but, you know, not in the Army. Mm. But in the movie, they have co-ed infantry, co-ed Navy, the whole bit. Anyway, they have the infamous shower scene and all these naked people showering together. Paul Verhoeven said that he wanted, the point was not just to have nudity, although I think it was, but mm-hmm, he wanted to show that this, you know, kind of fascist way of life was, you know, sexless, because they, all these naked men and women together, but yet all they were talking about was, you know, their time in the boot camp, and they weren't, mm-hmm, ogling each other or doing all that. It doesn't come across that way because the whole movie is so sexualized.
Yeah.
There's the love quadrangle. There's a sex scene later. So the whole movie's so sexually charged that it's hard to...
That one scene...
One scene that they're supposed to be like sexless androids or whatever doesn't really read that way.
No.
So yeah, kind of a failure on the director on that part.
Yeah.
But anyway, I want to talk about... We're about to get into the second half of this movie, which is very action-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
Again, a change from the book. Book was not an action book. It is a movie, basically a diagram of how a future military would be structured and the morality of their way of doing things versus our way of doing things. And then a couple of bug battles at the beginning and at the end. But they changed that, pump a lot of action into the second half of this movie. Let's talk about the arachnids, the difference between book and movie. In this movie, the main enemy bug, the arachnids, are displayed as these giant sort of arachnid insect things that are, you know, probably what, 4 or 5 times the size of a human. Really strong, really powerful.
Has a thick outer shell to them in the movie.
Yeah. Takes a lot of bullets to kill one.
Yeah.
Just, you know, the Carl says towards the beginning, you can take out a leg, but it still makes...
Still has 86%.
87% combat efficiency. You got to aim for the central nervous system or whatever. In the book, we have the arachnid race. I don't think they're supposed to be quite as big. And they actually carry... I mean, they are arachnid, you know, shape, but they actually carry, like, laser guns, which they, you know, again, I think a smart move. Paul Verhoeven got rid of that. He wanted them to be more, you know...
Buggish.
Insectoid. Mm-hmm. And there's different breeds of aliens, mm-hmm. both in the movie. The movie takes some of those away from the book, adds some that weren't in the book. The book has the arachnids. They had this race that is excised from the movie called Skin, that they call Skinnies, which actually defect and help the humans at some point in the book. And then the book does have the brain sucking. They don't actually like describe in detail the brain sucking, but there are the brain bugs mm-hmm. that are like the brains of the operation that are captured at the end. And then there is alluded to a queen, although they never see a queen in the novel. I think those later terrible sequels of the movies do get into queens, but
yeah.
This movie has the arachnids, has the brain bug, but it also adds flying bugs mm-hmm. that look basically like the arachnids, but with wings. We'll talk about creature design in depth later. They have the giant cockroaches that are in the book. They carry the brain bugs around.
And then
I think the biggest addition is the bugs that shoot the plasma balls, the giant bugs that spit fire out of their horns and shoot plasma balls out of their abdomens into space. It's like a mm-hmm. anti-aircraft or anti-spaceship defense system.
And it works pretty well.
And they also, those bugs also, use their plasma balls to knock meteorites, you know, orbiting their planet out of orbit and towards Earth. That's how they, like, attack distant objects in the movie, is they knock these asteroids out of orbit and shoot them towards other planets. And it is, I think, insinuated that they travel via asteroid. Not that way in the book. In the book, they actually build starships, and they don't have these big bugs shooting plasma balls into the air. They actually build starships and travel via starship.
So they're more human-like in the book?
The Skinnies are described as a more humanoid race. But the arachnids, I mean, they're kind of like in this movie, they're kind of like a hive mind insect hive. Mm. But yes, they carry guns, they build spaceships, a little more human-like in their behavior that way, I guess. And there's also a distinction within the arachnid type. There's a distinction between warrior arachnids, which are the ones that attack and kill. Mm. And then there's like, they're a smaller group, and then there's most of them are actually what they call workers, which are like they are like cowards. They don't attack or anything. They usually run from the other way from humans. So, you know, they're more kind of like a traditional insect hive or whatever.
Mm.
So yeah, that's taken out of this movie. Again, I think probably a smart choice, because you want all insects in a for a movie to be threatening, I think.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's the difference between the book and the movie as far as the insects go. So the movie, we go down to Klondothu. They, again, a lot like in the book, they are not, the humans are not prepared for what they're going to find there and get wiped out, basically. Rico is marked as killed in action, but he actually lived.
Mm-hmm.
But Carmen saw his name and thought he's dead.
Yeah.
But he actually goes into a back to tank. A straight up rip off of Star Wars, goes into a protective tank and gets his leg healed.
It's the only time somebody ever gets saved by that thing in the whole movie.
In the whole movie, yeah. Him and Carmen are kind of developing a relationship. We do a pretty quick turnaround where they go, again, another action scene. They go down to Planet P. Again, this thing kind of happens at the very end of the book, but plays out a little bit differently. They go down to Planet P in the movie. They think it's being cleared by aerial bombardment, but in fact, there's still a bunch of bugs hiding underground.
Mm-hmm.
And they get attacked. And there's this big action sequence in this compound with walls and, you know, kind of like in World War Z where the zombies are trying to
pile on top of each other
and get over the wall. The bugs are, you know, they're shooting them and they're piling up at the wall and everything. And they found some people with their brains sucked out. This is the first time we get introduced to the idea of someone eating their brains. And
mm-hmm.
one of the generals has survived and he's like all whacked out. Anyway, big action sequence. Michael Ironside, he's gone from teacher. He's been reactivated
mm-hmm.
and is a lieutenant now. And he gets killed. And Rico has to put him down. And then Dizzy is killed. That's a little bit later. Anyway, Carmen comes down, rescues them in a troop carrier.
Mm-hmm.
They get out. Carl comes back. He's been missing from this movie for a while. He comes back. He's like a mate.
A colonel, isn't he?
A colonel now. Yeah. He's kind of dressed in like that kind of traditional like Nazi officer outfit.
Yeah.
If you notice. But actually, Rico and the infantry were kind of set up because they wanted to figure out if there was a brain bug down there. And the attack confirmed that there was. So they sent him back down there, have another action scene fighting bugs. Carmen's spaceship gets blown in half by one of those plasma balls, and she has to escape. And then her and, I forgot to mention earlier, she's on the same ship as Xander. So mm-hmm. they've developed kind of a relationship because she broke up. She dear Johned Rico earlier.
Yeah.
And
it was
Rico's been, you know, he's got a fling now with Dizzy. Dizzy's finally got her way.
Mm-hmm.
Now she's dead. And then, anyway. Xander and what's her name? Carmen. Sorry. I keep forgetting her name. Xander and Carmen crash land underground into like the bug cavern or whatever
mm-hmm.
and get captured. And then Xander gets his brain sucked out. And we'll talk about it later. But anyway,
it's something.
It's something. And Rico, anyway, it's funny because like Rico is when he's first hears about her crashing, he's like, tells his men, stand down. She's already dead. But then he's like, as they're going to the cave, he's like, I gotta go this way. Carmen might still be alive. I feel it. I just know it.
Later,
of course, they try to say later
they
that.
Say, you know, that Charlie.
Carl.
Carl might have put it in his mind mm-hmm. to do that.
Mm-hmm. To do that, yeah. Anyway, so they go and rescue her and they find the brain bug. The brain bug gets away from them. They do it, set off a little nuke, kill the Arachnid soldiers. And then Sergeant Zim, now Private Zim, actually is the one who captures the brain bug off screen. But they got it in a big net. And Carl comes out there, old Neil Patrick Harris. And he like leans up against the bug. And he's like, it's afraid. And everybody cheers. I don't know why it's such a big deal, but whatever.
Because
it's a thinking bug. It's got emotions, I guess.
And since it's afraid, they know they're doing something right.
Yeah. And then we cut to a one last recruitment video and mm-hmm. get to credits.
With all the main cast in it.
Yeah. Yeah, so that is the movie. I mean, like I said, plays out quite a bit different than the book. They pretty radically changed it. You know, it's kind of interesting as, you know, looking back on it now. And like I said, the fact that it's kind of hard to see now, the fact that people didn't pick up on it being a satire, which I think some critics did, a lot of critics did. They just still didn't like it because the acting's terrible. And, you know, I think Casper Van Dien, he's pretty bad. I mean, he's pretty to look at, but he's pretty bad. He's
terrible at emotions.
Yeah, his, like, when he gets like worked up, he's not very good at, you know, being worked up.
It's like he's struggling to do stuff. He's like, oh yeah.
Denise Richards is not very good in this movie either, but she looks pretty. That's all that matters. I think Dina Meyer, I don't know. She's okay, I guess. Okay. I don't know. Neil Patrick Harris, he's not very good in this. You know, Michael Ironside, not very good in this. It's, you know, I don't, they were all pretty bad.
Yeah.
But it is what it is, I guess. But
effects, is that what next?
What we do next? Creature design?
Creature design.
Creature design. We got the arachnids. Like I said, they're like got this giant jaw. Basically, they're jaws with eight legs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they got very sharp, like, appendages that they stab people with, mm-hmm. bite people in half. They got little black eyes in the side of their head, green blood, all that kind of stuff. Then the flying ones, which are like green versions of the arachnids with wings, like dragonflies mixed with the arachnids.
Mm-hmm.
The little cockroaches that transport the brain bug around.
And then, you know, the plasma blasting blood.
Plasma blasters, right? Giant black beetles.
That they have orange blood instead of green.
Yeah, they got orange blood. Or maybe they're giant black fireflies because they light up. But yeah, they shoot flame out of a horn on their head. And then they...
I'm not sure if it's flame or like acid.
Some kind of orange acid or something. I don't know. CGI gets kind of wonky there. But and then they shoot these giant plasma balls out of their abdomen, which is kind of neat.
Mm-hmm.
And then... we got the brain bug. The brain bug is a giant slug with like eight eyes, but it
kind of looks like a grub worm.
Yeah. But it's got its face, its mouth or whatever that its brain sucking tube comes out of. I mean, it's very phallic. I won't use any other language on this family friendly podcast, but a very phallic looking orifice that it's this little like arm, gooey arm thing comes out of and like sticks in your head and sucks your brains out. It's really gross. But I think that's pretty much, you know, if you want to talk about like ship design and stuff, the ship's pretty, almost kind of reminds me vaguely of my vague memories of Battlestar Galactica ships. And they got like the four big engines on the back.
Battlestar
Galactica. You know, there's like some space docks that are ripped straight from Star Trek. And there's like one space dock that's like a ring around the moon, I think, at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And the troop carriers, which are, you know, pretty traditional sci-fi troop carriers and things like that. Going into effects, like Andrew said earlier, for a movie made in, you know, filmed in 96, released in 97. I think the CGI holds up pretty well. I mean, there's definitely moments where it's dated, but I'll give them credit. There's a lot of daylight action scenes. They're not afraid of showing the CGI. I think the bugs look pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
The space stuff
looks
fine. I mean, it's a little sketchy. It's achieved through a combination of miniatures and CGI, but I mean, too bad. I applaud them. They went out and, well, first of all, they shot, you know, quote unquote, on location and deserts and stuff a lot. And they also built some big sets, that space bridge or the ship bridge.
Mm-hmm.
They actually built a set for that. And
that whole boot camp thing.
The whole boot camp thing. The bridge set, you know, they like it, like breaks apart and shakes and has all that at the end. They built that little camp that they get attacked on Planet P with the big walls and everything.
That rope bucking robot that he's on.
Oh, yeah. I did read where the scene where Rico jumps on the back of the giant beetle thing. I mean, obviously, some of it's CGI.
Yeah.
But he did get strapped onto this, like, platform and bucked around a lot. And I think either bruised or broke his ribs doing it. So, you know, gotta honor his commitment because he didn't quit during the scene. He filmed it to the end. But anyway, yeah. So, I mean, Yeah. And, you know, they built all these weapons and stuff for them to carry and all that. So, I mean, the budget was pretty well spent. Yeah. I'm not going to complain there on effects, really. I think the worst scenes when that orange flame or acid or whatever is melting people, that looked pretty bad.
You can't have everything in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, so, but most of all, mostly pretty good. And then score, I don't really feel strongly one way or the other. It
fits the movie.
It sounded like he was trying to ape John Williams, especially towards the end.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it works. It's fine.
It doesn't ruin the movie at all.
No, it doesn't ruin anything. But, yeah. You ready for some final thoughts?
I mean, I guess so. Nothing else to talk about, I guess.
All right, well, go for it.
You know, this movie, it's there. It wasn't terrible. It's not like the worst movie you ever see or anything. But, you know, it's not like you're going in and watching, like, the greatest movie like they first intended it to be. Not the sci-fi epic of the 1990s or anything.
No, not even the sci-fi epic of 1997.
No. But, you know, it does its job. It keeps you pretty entertained with all the monster action and everything. The extreme boot camp and violence of how badly they're treated there. Mm-hmm. A lot of broken bones and people getting stabbed by the drill sergeants.
Yeah.
But, you know, the effects in this movie have to hold up pretty well considering what year it was made in and everything. And score, it's there. It does its job. It keeps the movie feeling pretty good. And, you know, acting, it's there. Not gonna say it's good, but, you know, they say what's on the script and that's all that you can ask for, I guess.
I think you can ask for more. If that's all it requires, I can do that.
Yeah.
I'll say this. They all got in shape for this movie. They all
they did
look pretty.
They look pretty, and you know.
But I think Paul Verhoeven said that, looking back at it, he wished he would have cast for talent instead of looks.
Yeah. I don't think it was the script's fault entirely.
No, they could have, you know, taken Wahlberg or Damon. They would have been young at the time and would have been better than Van Dien. I don't know. Wahlberg really depends on the director, but Damon would have been good no matter what.
Yeah. And, you know, monsters, they look good. The creatures in this movie, I like the design of the creatures. They were creepy enough and, you know, they were able to kill a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think I'll give this movie a D+.
A D+?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
What?
That's a little more harsh than I thought you were going to be. But,
I like it, but, you know, I have to keep it real.
Yeah. Well, listen, I think this movie is really kind of a fascinating case study of several things. One, in the fact that it's kind of an infamous failed sci-fi epic of the late 90s that was supposed to be a big hit, a career launcher, and it ended up fizzling out really fast. I think it's also a interesting case study in that it takes a novel written, obviously in a different time, written at the end of the 50s decade, and takes themes that were presented as very serious in that novel, and then they satirized them in the movie because the makers of that movie were on the opposite side of the political spectrum. And then, you know, all the history with the, you know, confusion over whether it was anti-fascist or pro-fascist or all of that. I mean, the movie is objectively a bad movie. Acting's bad. The characters don't really, you know, are pretty flat. You know, the action scenes are fine, but they're all crammed into the second half of the movie. It definitely could have used a bit better pacing. Although it's paced better than the book. I'll give it that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think you could look at it as a creature feature from the late 90s. And I think it more or less is functional in that light. Yeah. You could also look at it as a kind of satire on, you know, fascism or, you know, pro-military ideology and things like that. And you can, you know, have your opinions on how well the movie does with that. You know, I don't mind watching this movie. I think, like I said, I think there's quite a bit of fun. And when they're out there shooting the bugs and everything and doing all that. And I think the effects, like I said, are pretty impressive for the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, not always glowing, but pretty well done. And I think it's unintentionally funny at times.
Yeah.
Sometimes intentional, a lot of times unintentional. But seeing Neil Patrick Harris like lean up against a giant slimy bug and try to say it's afraid with a serious face is pretty entertaining. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'll say that, I don't know, I'll give the movie like a C. I think it's a C movie.
Mm.
But yeah. Anyway, let's wrap up with some news. I just wanted to, we'll probably do this for a few weeks running. As of April 7th, when we're recording this, a Godzilla Kong box office update. First weekend, it ended up coming in way above projections, made $80 million on Easter weekend, which was, like I said, way above even the highest, really, projections. Come in with like a $190 million global opening over the global weekend, or globally over the week's opening weekend. Had a great, you know, per day gross throughout the week. Second weekend looks like it's going to do about 32 million. It'll still be number one at the box office. It's up to 135 million in the States, which is equal to its production budget. It's made like 93 million in China. Globally, is it like 360 million already? So
it made its money back.
It's made its money back. It's going to make a lot more money. And might, globally, the projections have it, you know, kind of in that range. It might end up being the most successful globally. It would have to be, I think Skull Island made like 560 globally. It's kind of right now, I saw projected somewhere between 550 and 600 million final run globally. So it may end up being the most successful global MonsterVerse movie yet. But yeah, we're getting a sequel. Don't worry about it, folks. I don't know how long, probably a couple years. But anyway, the other news is I want to talk about. They released the trailer for the July Ultraman show coming out. Ultraman Arc.
Oh boy.
Yeah. I'll say the trailer didn't really excite me in any way. It looks like another pretty generic modern era Ultraman show, but
yeah,
we'll see. We'll see how it turns out.
You never know until the show starts.
Yeah. We'll definitely do a wrap up episode on the show once it concludes its run.
Mm-hmm.
So don't worry. We'll get to it. Other than that, I think we've got a pretty lengthy episode today for a non-new release.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope you guys enjoyed our discussion today on Starship Troopers and what little insight I offered on the book and the differences between said book and movie.
Oh, yeah.
But other than that, don't forget that you can always contact us at stompthisway1954@gmail.com. Andrew, tell them where they can find our website.
You can find that website at stompthisway.wordpress.com and find all you want there, like the schedule, a little bit about the podcast, and where you can find us on social media.
You can find us on Facebook, where I post religiously once a week about our new podcast. But you can always contact us on Facebook as well, and we can interact on social media, which I should do more.
Yeah.
But anyway, next week, another big movie in terms of infamy. We got Anaconda, starring J-Lo and Ice Cube and Owen Wilson and that like. So Look forward to that. Rewatch it or watch it for the first time if you somehow missed it. And join us for our discussion next week. And other than that, I'm Aaron.
I'm Andrew.
And we'll see you next time.